And that is Amanda White and Wackadoodle World. Whatever that means. Hello there, it's North Shore Sports Night. I'm Rick Moore, along with Tim Kearns, our producer and engineer, Bill Poposky, and of course, our organizer of the whole thing, the voice of the North Shore, Bill Newell. And a good lineup for tonight. Coach is here. Back to summer, I guess, after a taste of fall over the weekend.
I was in summer mode all weekend. Shorts and t-shirt.
Yeah, it wasn't bad. I mean, you know, it was cool, nice at night, but it wasn't that 93 degree heat that we
you found the timer
had experienced. No, that's not what I was looking for.
Oh, well, okay.
That's not the one I was looking for. It's this one over here. I did find that. I found that one. See it?
Okay.
But I don't know why these levels are off, but they're off.
Excuse me?
I have no idea why they're off, but they're off. But we'll fix them. No big deal. Anyway, tonight, Coach, got a little bit of time to chat here about Brady and the Patriots falling off the cliff.
Well, you know, my brother-in-law sent me a message about what he thought of the game in one word and five letters. And I said, you know, this is just the annual early season blip where they look absolutely horrible. The offense can't do anything. The defense can't stop the other team. This was Kansas City last year. That always happens within the first four games. They lay an absolute egg. And it's kind of like, if you look back over the history of the team since 2001, 2002, that's like setting up the rest of the league. Oh, the Patriots, they're done. It's all over. Brady is over the hill. They don't have any weapons. They can't make any plays. They can't stop anybody. And now, they're 1-1. They'll go 13-1. They'll lose one more game. You know, if they play true to form and with the talent that's on the team this year, well, it might be a little bit harder. But they're not done. No one's put a fork in them, except those who like to do that.
The thing is, too, is people... I think it was made clear that this was Jacksonville's Super Bowl. This was Jacksonville's Super Bowl.
They could lose every game the rest of the season, and they'll still look back on the night that they beat the Pats 31-20.
That's right. And in fact, some of those guys, that'll be the biggest games of their careers. And they earned it. They deserved it.
They played
smucked
well.
Them around.
They brought the house last night. And, and you know, on their part, the Pats did not tackle well. I don't know what zone they were playing, but, you know, Jacksonville figured out really early what they were playing.
How about this kid for Kansas City? You didn't see that?
No.
Oh, my word. Five touchdown passes he has.
Oh, Mahone?
Excuse me, six touchdown passes. Patrick Mahone, 10 touchdown passes in his first two games as a starter. Hello. And they were talking about Garoppolo. Wow. And he's 22 years old.
Yeah.
Holy smokes, and boy, can he fire it.
Well, there's a few good quarterbacks that came out this year, and given the opportunity under the right circumstances, you know, they're going to show what they can do, and the league needs a handful of new quarterbacks to rise up. And for these owners to spend some money, buy some talent around them, and give these guys a chance to shine, because it's only going to help your franchise in the long run.
All right, before we get to our tonight's lineup, how does Mookie Betts get hurt? How does he hurt his side throwing the ball?
I didn't see the play.
But it was his other side.
Was he?
What do I understand? He's throwing. He's a right-hander, right?
He pulled an oblique muscle.
I don't know.
Here?
I didn't see it. I
didn't see. Was he making a throw? To a base?
To home plate.
To home plate.
He's letting it out. I mean, obviously, airing it out.
Obviously, he was airing it out. Again, coming out and following through, just whipping his left arm back. He may have tweaked the oblique muscle. Possibility.
This is not a time.
No.
For Mookie Betts to get hurt.
You know, an oblique muscle... You know, you get down for a couple of days. You get in the hot tub and you get some treatment. And
you call Guerrero
and let him do some. You know,
there you go.
Deep muscle
TB12.
Massage. Yeah,
little TB12.
You know, and he'll be back on the field. He's gonna be ready. I don't think unless he's got a major oblique strain, that can become a little more disabled.
Well, I have no idea what
you
the
know because
is.
I mean hitting wise, you know, you lead with that front shoulder and you're turning. And that might become a problem.
There it is. Mookie Betts could play immediately after injury.
Yeah,
sixth inning, soreness in his left side, a left abdominal strain. He exited after making throws to the plates from right field on consecutive plays, stretching out his side on the field before he exited with a trainer. Throw that directly, blah, 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 blah. Further evaluated today, and no updates. And I didn't see Lynchy tonight, so I have no idea.
Yeah, again, they're off tonight. You probably won't see him play the next one or two games. Just give him a chance to rest it, you know, get some treatment, and then, you know, come in, play a couple of innings, get a couple of swings, see how it goes. Oh, you're going to be in the batting cage because there's no more minor league season because he's got nowhere to go. But so he's going to have to test it out during a regular game. Does he come in earlier and leave, or does he come in as a substitute late?
And is Stephen Wright your bridge guy?
That's a problem to me. Yeah,
Do you want him in there with bases loaded the eighth inning and you're down by a run knuckleball?
You know, we lived through that with Tim Wakefield, and he had his literal ups and downs with the knuckleball. We came to know Tim Wakefield, a fierce competitor. Is Wakefield talking to Wright? Oh yeah, you can believe that. You know, the Red Sox have got him in there working with him, talking to him, talking about the mental part of it. You know, because that's one of the hardest things. You've really got to be mentally focused when you're throwing the knuckleball, because you don't know where it's going to go. So you need to be really consistent with your release point. You know, so that you can maximize the movement of the ball.
Well, we'll see. It's fun. And what is it, 103 and counting? I mean, hello, what a season.
103. I sent a message to my brother-in-law last night. I said, I can see 110 wins.
Oh, wouldn't that be something,
They got 15 left.
That'd be something.
They can win. They're playing 70%.
I want to see them clinch it tomorrow night.
They have 10 left. They're playing 700 balls, so they can win 7 out of 10.
They can clinch it tomorrow night.
Wouldn't that be
cool?
Wouldn't that be sweet? And against the Yankees.
I know. Oh. It would be awesome. It would be awesome. Well, tonight we think we have a pretty darn good lineup for
awesome
you.
Awesome show.
There you go. We're going to start things off with Danvers High School baseball coach and North Shore football coach, who's coached in several different communities.
Former on both of those now.
Pardon? Yeah, former. Yeah. Roger Day. And I listen to Roger Day, I talk with Roger Day, or listen to him talk to somebody else, to you or Bill, I learn something. And, you know, we'll follow up eventually with Bob Boyce, because Bob has been so good to us over the years as well. I'm really looking forward to it and see, you know, where we can go with this, because I know his football coaching, Tim, he's as respected as a football coach as much as he is a baseball coach, and he's just the best in baseball.
You know, I keep reminding people that, you know, everybody mm-hmm. raves about Paul Ingram and the wing T that he employed for so many years at Gloucester, and Paul was always quick to point out, he learned the wing T from Roger.
Yeah.
Roger was the absolute
They were Beverly together, I believe.
Master.
Was it? No.
No, Danvers.
Danvers. They were Danvers. Danvers.
Yeah. So, can you see those two minds?
And
oh my God.
Roger was at Danvers, at Beverly, at Marblehead,
football. I don't think he ever really wanted to be the head coach of football, because he just enjoyed that offensive side so much.
Well,
he didn't want to have to concern himself with the defense. His job was to put points on the board.
You can ask him.
Let somebody else stop them.
We'll also talk to Gary Larrabee, of course. Gary, weekly golf update, and he does such an amazing job with the national events, the world events in terms of golf, but also brings it down to the local level in a way that no one else can do. We'll check in with Salem High School football coach Matt Bouchard. The team is 2-0 for the Witches. We'll check in with Coach Bouchard and also talk with Scott Cooper. Scott follows Marblehead football, among others, Marblehead Sports and Swampscott Sports for the papers up in that region.
Yeah, Marblehead had a tough game Friday night. 18-6 over Revere.
Revere's good. Yeah. They're not a bad team.
Oh no, I'm saying, you know, they gave them a battle. It was not an easy show. So, you know, Marblehead, you know, they're the team with the real big bullseye on their back nowadays.
Yeah.
You know, and you've got to put, you know, but again, what happens at the end of the game? You rack up a W, and that's what you're looking to do. Whether it's 18-6 or 38-6, it's that W that matters most, and you were able to, you know, withstand the effort of Revere.
I love Coach Rodloff. He always speaks highly of his kids, with respect to the other team as well about the kids and the coaches and so on, but he has never, and I guess this is the mark of a coach, a competitive, he's never satisfied, ever.
No.
And when I guess when you're teaching, you know, you've got the next game coming up, so you have to, and what's the word, the mantra? It's you got to get better. You have to continue to get better. No matter where you are, you got to get better.
Yep. You know, it's okay, we won this game, but we have to be better next week.
All right. And that's what happened to the Patriots that, what was it, they were 17-0 that year? 18-0? They didn't get better. They plateaued, and the Giants knocked them off. All right, we'll be right back with our first guest. This is North Shore Sports Night.
What's better than a Patriots win? Our penalty-free 9-month CD. Score big with a 2.25% annual percentage yield. Withdraw the total balance and interest earned at any time without any penalty. Visit institutionforsavings.com for a list of locations or call 978-462-3106. APY effective 8/20/18. Term deposit rate and APY fixed for term duration. $250,000 minimum balance to open and obtain APY. May close out at any time during term with no penalty except for the first 6 days following opening. No partial withdrawals. Product not available for individual retirement accounts. Rate subject to change. Deposit insured in full. Account holder must be present to open. Member FDIC DIF.
Fact is, including the commute, people spend 10 hours a day at work. No wonder they're forced to buy car insurance in 15 minutes. They just don't have time to go meet with someone. Well, Columbia Insurance has an alternative. The insurance professionals at Columbia Insurance Agency will meet with you at your workplace. Even better, we'll go to the registry and bring your plates back to you at work, free of charge. At Columbia Insurance Agency, we come to you, and we really do. Visit ColumbiaInsuranceAgency.net and set up an appointment today. That's ColumbiaInsuranceAgency.net.
We're back.
He's not available at the moment.
Where's the you took my sports page away.
I didn't take my sports
you
page
saw a couple of games this weekend. Oh, no, I've got it over here. You're right.
I know.
Okay, so we had a couple of games on Friday night. To me, the shocker for me, and I put the word in small letters and in quotes, was Danvers over Peabody 30-3. I was expecting a much closer game, and Peabody just couldn't get any offensive rhythm going. They have a new system, and Coach Betancourt has pointed that out, that it's going to take some time to adjust to it. Their quarterback was tremendous, but they just couldn't get any rhythm going, and the Danvers defense was excellent, and of course the Danvers offense got plenty of points. So it was a rather, I don't want to say an easy win, but a surprising score for me, 30-3. And then I listened to you guys on Saturday with Gloucester and Beverly just has to be snake-bitten. I mean, my goodness, what a game.
Well, you know, Marty pointed it out in the second half and during the fourth quarter when Gloucester coming back. Beverly's two touchdowns came as a result of two plays. Two kickoff returns for touchdowns. 163 and the other 82. Okay. Other than that, their offense produced 3 points.
And that's highly unusual.
Yeah, you know, McAlpine ran a little bit better in this game.
And you and I saw Moreland have a spectacular game.
Moreland,
week before
to me,
against
was
Lynn
a
English.
Non-factor in Saturday's game. I mean, beyond the week before, Gloucester did a good job of covering him.
Well,
when they went to him,
Gloucester, yeah. Well, Gloucester's 2-0, Beverly is 0-2. Good game on Saturday with that Bill had with John Squires. It was 27-20 North Reading, giving it up to Hamilton Wenham. First win for Coach Pugh's boys this year. And we're going to talk to Matt Bouchard. Maybe we'll just call him a little bit earlier. Coach Bouchard winning 25-13 over Essex North Shore. That's Essex Tech, I believe, or Essex
Yeah, it was formerly known as Essex. Bill and I, Monty and I, were trying to figure out what to call him.
Yeah,
you know, we were going to call it Essex Tech at Hawthorne.
Swampscott, poor Triton. Triton's having a tough time getting on the scoreboard. Triton getting shut out by Swampscott, 49-0 over the weekend. A big, big game, and Bill Newell has. A nice post on our website with Ipswich High School football coach Kevin Fassett as the Tigers beat Newburyport 20-7. Masconomet bounced back over the weekend big time. Winthrop winning and boys are looking pretty good overall. What's interesting, Coach, you get out of the Cape Ann League, and what's fascinating to me is that there are only two teams in the league after 2 weeks that are unbeaten. That's, would you call that parity, I would say?
Well,
Ipswich and Amesbury, the only teams that haven't lost. Everybody
yeah,
else
and,
has.
And I think that's probably surprising a lot of people, Amesbury especially, that you know, in a lot of sports is as kind of tough going, hasn't really, you know, come away with conference championships. But 2-0 and you know, 52-12 in terms of points scored and points given up. That's a lot of offense over two games, and that's a lot of defense that they're throwing at their opponents right now.
Due to personnel difficulties this weekend, we're just going to have one football game. That will be on Friday night, and that will be Lynn Classical at Revere. That should be a terrific game.
Should be, absolutely.
And Revere looking to get into the win column. They've played both Gloucester and Marblehead tough, but they've come up short first couple of weeks. And Classical is 2-0. So that should be a good one. That'll be our only broadcast game this week. We're going to bounce back the following week full time with probably three or four games over the weekend. So
the I was talking to Gary Malia as he was exiting the stadium for a short time on Friday night on my way in, and he said Classical is really good. You know, Thanksgiving Day, Thanksgiving ought to be awesome. They hopefully won't be as disappointing a game as it was last year when it became one-sided. Because right, because and we all thought last year with both teams playing well, but if it plays out, this could be a really exciting game. You got two senior quarterbacks, yeah, Ridley at Lynn Classical, and you got Matt Severance from Lynn English, who can both throw it all over the field.
All right, well, that's a little bit down the road, Coach. That's 8 or 9 or 10 weeks away, so we'll get there.
It's exciting.
We'll get there. All right, yeah, we'll get there. In the meantime, we'll take a break, and we'll see if we can come up with somebody to talk with. It'll either be Roger Day, or we might go a little early with Coach Bouchard if he's available, but he's not expecting our call till the second half, so we'll see. Right now, let's see. North Shore Sports Night is where we are. We'll be right back, hopefully with somebody to talk with. We do have Gary Larrabee in the wings, and we'll be talking with Scott Cooper later on.
Fact is, including the commute, people spend 10 hours a day at work. No wonder they're forced to buy car insurance in 15 minutes. They just don't have time to go meet with someone. Well, Columbia Insurance has an alternative. The insurance professionals at Columbia Insurance Agency will meet with you at your workplace. Even better, we'll go to the registry and bring your plates back to you at work, free of charge. At Columbia Insurance Agency, we come to you, and we really do. Visit ColumbiaInsuranceAgency.net and set up an appointment today. That's ColumbiaInsuranceAgency.net.
Gloucester's Walter Wilkins Insurance Agency is teaming up with Columbia Insurance to deliver a full line of products, personal home and auto policies, as well as a full line of commercial coverage for business owners, including commercial property and commercial vehicle coverage. Wilkins partners with respected companies such as Plymouth Rock, Quincy Mutual, Commerce, and Safeco. For City of Gloucester employees, there are discounts on auto and home policies. Wilkins Insurance is located at 186 Main Street, Gloucester, now partnering with Columbia Insurance, serving the North Shore.
Stable businesses form the backbone of strong communities, and nothing provides greater advantage than having strong business banking professionals behind you. Since 1846, businesses on Cape Ann have leveraged the strength and stability of Cape Ann Savings Bank to grow and thrive. Let's talk about your business. Call 978-283-0246 or visit capeannsavings.bank to learn how we can help you grow your business your way. Cape Ann Savings Bank, built on stability.
Member FDIC, member DIF, Equal Housing Lender.
Okay, we are back, and happy that Coach Bouchard could entertain our call here. Matt Bouchard of the Salem High School Witches is on the line. And, Coach, welcome back to MSO. Congratulations on the really good start.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Glad to be here.
Yeah, you guys are off to a really nice start. And, you know, 2-0, big win on over the weekend. You guys play Friday or Saturday?
We played on Friday.
On Friday. All right. Well, tell us a little bit about that game, Coach.
Yeah, so I think to start out, I think this year we did graduate a lot of experience. We do have older guys, but not a ton of experience. So these first two games, the kids have really impressed me. kind of working out some of those issues that you tend to see with inexperience, whether it's, you know, small penalties that get you off schedule offensively or defensively, maybe getting in the wrong alignment. But I think every play there was this this drive to get better. Their will to win, you know, has impressed me, you know, each and every quarter that they've been through as a team, and they've gotten closer, you know, every play. So I think for this past week, I think the big thing, we were going up against Essex Tech, which is a triple option team, which, again, is one of those types of offenses that really kind of puts a lot of pressure on defenses, and this is the first year they ran it, and they actually ran it very, very well. That first half was really a street fight, you know, and we made some adjustments at halftime, but I think the biggest thing coming out of the half is it was really the first time I saw, you know, the Witches as a team really kind of attack the field as a group, really with that one purpose, that one vision to execute, and the second half we're able to kind of shut down the triple and get the thing moving on offense.
Coach, how much has the success you had last year played over to this year?
I think, like anything, I think a big part of, you know, kind of keeping things moving is confidence. I think when underclassmen see that, you know, your philosophies, your approaches, you know, are working and they lead to success, you know, you just kind of get the buy-in a lot sooner. So, you know, when you look at, you know, how we're approaching, you know, during football camp, you know, we're able to get guys in position to be successful much, much faster.
Coach, is this your fourth year now, or?
I'm entering my fifth. This is my fifth year.
Fifth year, okay. I know it was right around there. And it does take time, and I think we talked way back when you first started, about getting the kids to buy into the philosophy that you and your staff were bringing, to buy into the offensive philosophy, the defensive philosophy, the work ethic that you were going to demand of those guys. And it has to be very satisfying to see the progression of development that the kids have achieved over the first 4 years.
Without question, I think I've been extremely fortunate to have you know, some great leadership in the locker room. And I've always said, you know, great coaches deliver average teams, but great leaders in the locker room develop those great teams. And I think every year, you know, each class kind of hands down what they've learned to the next kind of generation of leaders, and it kind of builds on itself. So I think, you know, going into this year, you know, we have kind of a locker room filled with a lot of knowledge that's been passed on these last few years, and you know, and I think it's starting to pay dividends.
Can you talk about your captains for us, Coach?
Yeah, certainly. So Jake Opeña, he started for a few years for us, both on offense and defense. This year on offense, he's playing tight end. He had a critical catch last week against Essex Tech. A big third down play going in with about 35 seconds to go. We ran a pass, and he caught the ball on the one-yard line to give us a first down and an opportunity to win that football game. So just, you know, good plays can be good, but I think great plays execute when they, you know, really need a big play. You know, you need to be great in those great moments. So he's an example of a young man that, you know, when push comes to shove and I need him to step up, you know, he's someone we can always rely on. Defensively, we move him around a little bit. He plays some D-tackle as well as defensive end. But I think that he's somebody that when we talk about character and we talk about, you know, how to approach the game, and he's somebody that I think is the face of the program without question. The second young man is Matt Noonan. Matt Noonan earned the position of captain during football camp this year. He worked extremely hard in the offseason. He's somebody that's starting center for us on offense and getting some reps at D-tackle on defense. But he's somebody that, you know, for me, I think that there are a couple fundamental things to be a great captain. I think you need to know what you're doing. You need to be confident in what you're doing. You need to have good character, right? You need to do the things you say you're going to do. And I think lastly, you got to build trust. And I think Matt's really good at kind of building relationships, and you know, especially on the offensive line, it's a particular unit where you need, you know, guys really kind of pointing in the same direction. He's done a really nice job on the O-line, bringing a lot of those younger guys up to speed.
Matt, how do you gauge attitude? Because what Tim, I was going to ask you about what Tim did in terms of installing and instilling the culture at Salem. Because I know there was a time that the kids in some of the games we did a long time ago, they had some talent, they played very well, but they played a little tentatively. And to me, it's something to do with attitude sometimes. And when you've got leadership like you do, these kids, the older kids who have that competitiveness and the character, they must be able to get it out to the other kids, because football is something, you know, the kids can play other sports, but football is something that you think about all year round. I mean, you guys have a workout schedule that goes right through the school year.
Right. I mean, I'm a firm believer that attitude's one of the most important ingredients when you're really trying to build, you know, a successful program. And I think we try as a staff to really kind of bring that out as one of our highest or our most important attributes of what we're trying to get as a unit or as a team. And what we try to do is we, instead of trying to build a culture across the whole team, we really break it into its units. So, you know, the O-line coach really focuses on the attitude and the approach of that unit. And then again, the linebacker coach focuses on the attitude and the approach of that group. And again, once we start to look at things, we can say, okay, you know, there are two out of the nine groups are performing at a high level. They get the right attitude, and there's deficiencies here and there. And we just continue to chip away at that. And I think over the last several years, to your point, is, you know, we've identified those areas of deficiency and just really kind of worked on it. But we worked on it from a tactical way. We looked at each individual unit. We weren't trying to change the world right out of the gate. And I think that we're at a point now where we have leaders in each unit, you know, that can really kind of drive the culture of that unit.
One thing Paul Ingram used to mention to me, Coach, when we were teaching together was how football permeates real life, and that you play to win and you want to win, and that, you know, when you're playing interscholastic sports, that's number one, of course. But he'd always talk about some of these kids who weren't superstars or, you know, you never saw their names in the papers, but they did it right, and it carried over into other things. It carried over into the community. It carried over into their home lives or whatever. That said, I've been asking coaches, because I think we neglect it sometimes. Can you mentioned one kid who plays line on D, I think, and can you mention one or two other kids who have that that attitude and that self-discipline, who maybe you don't see the highlight during the game because you're following the ball, but when you watch it on film, you see how good this kid has played up front.
Yeah, I mean, one kid I'd like to highlight that you might actually see if you're watching where the ball's running is Melkin Baptista. He's a junior. He plays guard for us. You know, last year as a sophomore, he for a good portion of the year was a two-way starter for us. You know, he's about 270 pounds, and he can move.
Mercy.
You know, and in youth, he was actually a fullback. So he has a sense of kind of, you know, he's spatially aware, you know, and to put a kid that has that understanding, you know, at guard, mm-hmm. really gives you competitive advantage, especially at 270. So athletically, he gets it. But I think the thing here is that when it comes to, you know, the discipline to do the things you need to do to be successful, when maybe, you know, if you have a take strength and conditioning, you know, everybody knows they need to get up in the morning and work out, but you have to have the discipline to get up and mm-hmm. do it. He's somebody that gets it. He understands that. And it's certainly helped him in his career so far. And I think that type of attitude and that type of approach, he's definitely one of the unit leaders on that offensive line that's really helping that group kind of come together.
You know, because we're talking about attitude, and as you and Rick were discussing that, the word just came into my mind was belief. Believing in yourself. Believe in your talent. Believe that you can get better every day, and believe that the guys around you that you're playing with can do their job as well. And it's the idea of playing with a confidence, not a cockiness. Because the guy who's cocky will get his head knocked off. But the guy who plays with confidence is a thinking player. He's going to be looking at what the next play is. How is the defense maybe reacting to our offensive scheme? How to counteract that? And vice versa on the defensive line. You know when you see a cocky team, because there's certain ways that they comport themselves. And then you see a confident team that simply walks out there and knocks your block off.
I agree. Listen, I think one of the things that when I was first started talking about, you know, the experience on this football team, it's really getting a group of guys to the point where they're confident in what they're doing, right? So, and that takes time. Hopefully the culture can kind of speed that up a little bit and make it so that we can get there faster. But some of it is you got to learn when you're out there. It's something that you got to kind of grow, and you can't force it. It's got to kind of happen naturally. And I think this last game, I really feel like there were events that happened in that game that told me a lot about the football team I have this year at Salem High School. You know, especially from a character perspective, which is ultimately going to drive the confidence of how they're playing. So, you know, the second half we held Essex Tech to 6 yards of total offense, compared to the first half where they had 150 yards of total offense. So, you know, they really started trusting each other, and with triple option, you know, you got to trust that the guy next to you is going to do his part. And they really, you know, started to understand that and rely on each other, which is extremely important when it comes to confidence. And then offensively, we got the ball with just about 4 minutes to go in the game on our own 24-yard line, and we had to go 76 yards to win the football game. And, you know, our guys, you know, again, the O-line came together, you know, and it just the confidence I saw during timeouts, there was definitely no cockiness. There was a bunch of guys that really were focusing on each other and not against who we're playing, and really focusing on the next play and what they needed to do to be successful. And I think, to me, those moments in that game told me a lot about where this team is and ultimately the potential of where it can go.
Coach, what's the focus this week? Because you're playing at Saugus on Saturday, and they look at like a team that's had perhaps a little bit of hard luck, I'm sure that you're not going to take these guys very lightly.
No. I mean, and film doesn't lie. You know, I think that they have some talented athletes without question. You know, and between, you know, some of the film work we did today with the players, as well as what the staff's done over the weekend, you know, looking at what they're doing, they have some players in multiple skill positions on offense. They have some a few solid offensive linemen that really can get push and really try to control that line of scrimmage. And then defensively, they're really, really aggressive. You know, so they're going to bring a lot of pressure. They're going to attack. They're not going to sit back and try to figure it out. They're really going to come after you. So there's no question we got our hands full. And again, it's another step in building that experience. Mm-hmm. So, you know, every week we're seeing a different team with a different mentality and a different approach. And all these guys are kind of taking it on for the first time. You know, so hopefully we do a good job this week during practice and really getting prepared for what they're going to see, so that, you know, when that foot hits the ball on Saturday afternoon, you know, those guys are in the right position to be successful.
Sounds great, Coach. Great job so far, and good luck on Saturday. We'll talk to you down the road.
Great. I appreciate it. Thank you, guys.
Thank you, Coach.
Thanks, Coach.
That is Coach Matt Bouchard, and it brought to mind, we didn't mention it last Monday, but Lynn Classico held Beverly last week to 5 yards total offense in the second half.
Lynn English.
Lynn English held the Panthers to 5 yards. And then Danvers held, until the last drive of the game, Peabody had only 89 yards of offense until that very last drive. So the Danvers defense was pretty stiff as well. And Saugus, of course, having, the cloud hanging over their head with the coaching problem at the moment. Hopefully that gets settled and things will calm down for the Sachems, and the kids will be able to just concentrate on football and get out there and have some fun. So that should be a good game. That's a Saturday game, Salem at Saugus. Well, we'll take a quick break. Come right back with Gary Larrabee. Be a little late. I don't want him mad at me, so hang in there. We'll be right back.
Catch a game with friends, meet for lunch, cocktails after work, or a romantic dinner for two. Whatever you plan to do it at Sylvan Street Grill in Peabody and Salisbury. See you at Sylvan Street.
Eat, drink, and chill at the Sylvan Street Grill. Hi folks, this is Gerard Moynihan of Moynihan Lumber. Our company has been proud to have supported high school sports on the North Shore for more than 30 years. Our student athlete program recognizes championship performance in the classroom and on the field. Moynihan Lumber is also committed to championship performance when it comes to meeting all your building and home improvement needs. And if you're planning to change your kitchen, please visit our kitchen cabinet showrooms at any of our three locations. In Beverly, North Reading, or Plaistow, New Hampshire, or at MoynihanLumber.com.
All right. Yeah, we are a little late. Well, quite late, as a matter of fact. I just looked at the clock. Gary Larrabee is with us now, sports historian, golf writer. Hello, Gary.
Good evening, man. How are we doing tonight?
I'm doing good. How are you doing, Tim?
I'm doing good.
We're doing good. We're doing good. How are you doing?
Good.
How are you doing?
Okay, let's get to it.
Let's talk some local golf first, and the amazing Frank Vanna Jr. from Ferncroft and Boxford, who's best known probably these days for being the husband of Becky Blades, the director of communications for the Mass Golf, and you know, one of our great all-time great high school athletes out of Massanomet and then out of Harvard. And anyways, Frank's also continuing to make a name for himself as a championship golfer. Last week won a record 10th Massachusetts Mid-Amateur Championship at Plymouth after tying for 36 holes. It was a rain abbreviated from 54 holes to 36 because of the bad weather one day down there. And Frank won in a sudden-death playoff against two other, what I would call, five-star players. Jack Kearney from Elmcrest, a retired airline pilot, and Mike Califf, who's a two-time Massachusetts amateur champion, like Frank Vanna, but this is for mid-amateurs, 25 years in age and older. And Frank, as you guys know, is a crinkly old 55. And Frank, of course, broke his own record. He had the record, of course, of 9. Now he has 10 mid-amateur championships, beating all these young whippersnappers. And an extraordinary performance by Frank, who, of course, earlier this summer missed the cut by a mere shot at the U.S. Senior Open and then reached a round of 16 at this year's USGA Senior Amateur after finishing fifth in the field of like 190 players after the 36-hole stroke play. So another wonderful performance and another reminder of why Frank has probably been the finest amateur player around here since James Driscoll, who went on the PGA Tour. You know the rest of that story. But another amazing performance by Frank Vanna Jr., and we must congratulate him. He's won two Mass Amateurs. He's won. He's been a two-time Massachusetts Amateur Player of the Decade. And what is he going to do next?
Well, the next time around, he's going to qualify for the Senior Open.
Well, he did last year, I should say he did earlier this year, maybe he will next year too, Tim. Nothing will surprise me. Frank's still a great player and just a fascinating member of our golf community. We're lucky to have him here on the North Shore now.
Okay, so he's won 10 mid-amateurs. That kind of experience, the kind of winning experience, Gary, what does that mean for a guy like Frank Hayes that you know, crusty 55, you know, that you mentioned, which means we should all be sitting at a home somewhere, I think. Again, like you said, all the young whippersnappers who are coming out, who are longer, leaner, hitting the ball harder, hitting the ball farther. What's been his key to success to holding all these young guys off?
Well, he stayed in pretty good physical and mental shape, Tim, and also he's still a wonderful straight down the middle play. Doesn't hit it far. And he's one of these simple fairways and greens guys who's wonderful around the greens, on the greens, and he hasn't lost hardly anything off his game from when he was in his 30s or 40s, and we'll see if he can keep it going for goodness knows how many more years. But this has been a wonderful theme this year around here, Tim, as you know, for some of the great young players we have, like the Turner brothers and Stephen Delisio and others at the high school levels as the high school golf season's underway. We've got these old timers are just still playing great. And I, of course, mentioned Kirk Hannafeld, who's won the New England Seniors this year for the second time in 4 years that he's tried to win it. He's 62, and he's still got a tremendous amount of game. He was a contender and almost won the New England PGA Section Championship for a fourth time. He just missed out. But these guys who have age have still got the same game they had 10, 15, 20, 25 years ago. Just fascinating to watch these guys keep it going after all these years.
Yeah. Is it a case of these young guys are wishing these old guys would just simply go away?
No, I think they've taken good care of themselves physically and mentally, like I just said with Frank, and of course the equipment's been a big help. All this new equipment, the technology, the golf ball, and it never ends. We just love watching these guys and love seeing their success and hope it continues for many, many years.
Okay, you know, you mentioned the technology, and I think everybody has seen the clubs, the size of the head of the drivers. You got hybrids. You know, you got variable degree irons for playing out of traps and all that. What has been the technological evolution of the golf ball? Cause I don't think many people focus on the golf. Oh, okay, they pull it out of the bag. They say which one and number they're playing. They put it down and they hit it. What's been the evolution of the golf ball, let's say, over the last 10 years?
Well, if you have a couple of hours, I could tell you about it.
The abbreviated version.
Oh, goodness.
The fact is, guys, that the USGA and the Royal and Ancient of St. Andrews have lost... They did lose control of the game and the conditions under which the game is played to allow not only the equipment to improve, but of course that includes the golf ball. And any top price golf ball you buy out there today in a pro shop is an outstanding golf ball, but of course Titleist stands above them all, and they've made small changes with them, with the inner core, with the outside portion of the golf ball as well, and the golf ball now performs better, of course, than it ever has for the top player, the guy who, like a Vanner or at the amateur level, or Hannenfeld at the professional level, and these guys have gone with it. The ball behaves beautifully for them these days, both on the off the driver face, and of course as well as off the iron face when they're hitting the balls to the green. Putting is a little different, but these players talk up these golf balls, and they talk about Callaway, they talk about all the other top notch. There's about 10 really good golf balls these days. Bridgestone, TaylorMade makes a terrific golf ball to go along with their terrific clubs, and they're all trying to keep up with Titleist, and they really are having doing a very good job of it, because Titleist still controls about 65% of the market. But they're all doing better, and they're all making the players happy, because they're performing better and better for the players from tee to green.
Kudos, because Titleist is a Massachusetts company, sent it down in a cushion, and I believe it's still there, right?
Right, and they make over 1 million golf balls a day. That's how many. What the demand still is for their golf ball around the world, not just here in America. You watch any of these tournaments in Asia, in Europe, a lot of the top players are wearing Titleist visors, because most of them are playing Titleist golf balls, probably. And it's the gold standard, my man. Simple as that.
All right, Gay, what happened on the national level this week? And I have to be honest, I didn't watch much golf. I was out and about Friday and Saturday, and yesterday I was on a long motorcycle ride, so I didn't get a chance to see much of the golf.
Out and about? What's out and about mean, Tim?
Traveling the highways and byways of Massachusetts and southern New Hampshire.
Okay, we won't go into any more details there, but well, I think the one unfortunate bad news on the pro circuit was the fact that Rob Oppenheim played poorly this week at the fourth and final tournament on the Nike Tour. I'm sorry, it used to be the Nike Tour. Now it's the Web.com Tour Playoffs, which is what Rob did last year. He played very well last year to finish in the top 25 for those four tournaments. he regained his PGA Tour card. He did not do that yesterday. He shot 73 for 278, finished in a tie for 58th place. You got to shoot low numbers on that web.com tour. And he will have to start 2019 on the web.com tour. He lost his card yesterday, and he needed to almost win the tournament to regain and retain his card after not playing very well anyways during the regular tour season. So whether he wants to continue back on the web.com or maybe hang it up, he's got a wife, he has two children now, he may not want to do this any longer. We'll have to wait. He can certainly get a wonderful club job in Florida or up here in New England if he so chose.
Okay, what's up? What's up next? What's coming up in the next week, either locally or nationally?
Well, the big event, of course, is the fourth and final week of the FedEx Cup playoffs in Atlanta. You know, Bryson DeChambeau, the fellow who plays with all of his clubs being the exact same length, he won the first two events. And Massachusetts favorite son Keegan Bradley, you know, won last week in Philadelphia. So we got the final round, the final tournament, I should say, this weekend in Atlanta. And we've already determined our U.S. team for the Ryder Cup coming up in Paris at the end of the month, which should be fantastic. I mean, wouldn't you love to be able to cover that at the end of the month, Tim?
Yeah.
Have to do a road trip in Paris.
There you go.
Hey, listen, I can. Anyway, I'll be your bodyguard, Gary.
I'd love to be there, but it'll be great to watch on TV as well. That's coming up at the end of the month. But one more piece of business this weekend in Atlanta with Tiger Woods in the field and all the usual suspects. We'll see what happens this weekend. See if Keegan Bradley can win again, maybe even win the $10 million prize for having the best point total after the four tournaments, or who can win the $1.7 million first prize just for winning this week's tournament.
Now, is DeChambeau leading in terms of the points with two wins?
DeChambeau's leading in terms of the points. It's complicated. You'll have to look up the point totals on the web, but it should be an exciting weekend, and let's see who steps up, and let's see who wins all the big money.
All right, Gary, we'll talk to you next Monday.
Talk to you next Monday.
Sounds good. Thank you, Gary.
Thanks, Gary.
Hugs and kisses.
He says the sweetest thing.
Oh, my God. Gary Larrabee, sports historian, sports writer, golf. Oh, my goodness gracious. Lordy mercy. And he'll have his column in the Salem News on Friday. Gloucester Field Hockey improves to 3-0 with an 11-0 win at Everett. Lauren Alves had a hat trick. Mia Sala, Kate Delaney, and Jemima Grow, two goals apiece, according to Brian Lafata, who has got GHS Fisherman Athletics tweets moving out. So congratulations, Gloucester Field Hockey. They are already at 3-0. All right, we'll take a break, and we'll see if Scott Cooper is available. We'll be right back.
Stable businesses form the backbone of strong communities, and nothing provides greater advantage than having strong business banking professionals behind you. Since 1846, businesses on Cape Ann have leveraged the strength and stability of Cape Ann Savings Bank to grow and thrive. Let's talk about your business. Call 978-283-0246 or visit capeannsavings.bank to learn how we can help you grow your business your way. Cape Ann Savings Bank, built on stability.
Member FDIC, member DIF.
Gloucester's Walter Wilkins Insurance Agency is teaming up with Columbia Insurance to deliver a full line of products, personal home and auto policies, as well as a full line of commercial coverage for business owners, including commercial property and commercial vehicle coverage. Wilkins partners with respected companies such as Plymouth Rock, Quincy Mutual, Commerce, and Safeco. For City of Gloucester employees, there are discounts on auto and home policies. Wilkins Insurance is located at 186 Main Street, Gloucester, now partnering with Columbia Insurance, serving the North Shore.
We'll be right back.
We had the party line, too.
You know, in my history class, I talked all the old stuff, you know, when I was a kid, and you don't have this today, you mm-hmm. know, you know, and the progression of the types of phones. I remember when my sister bought my mother a princess phone for my parents' bedroom, you know, and how different that was, you know, and but it still had the rotary dial on the handset. It wasn't
well,
the button yet.
I go back before the rotary dial, so there
you're
you go.
Still talking into the crank box.
We used to have no. That's right. Pretty much, you'd pick up the phone and an operator. Operator, what number, please? And 3839W. Did you say 3839W? Yes, I did.
Did you ever tell a Susquehanna 2222?
Oh, God. Is this the party to whom I'm speaking? And I remember I had a switchboard. We had a switchboard, of course, at the radio station. You'd have to use all the plugs and so on, you know, to do the different things that are now all done digitally. But when I worked, when I was in college at UMass, the same thing. I was the Amherst Motel manager for a short time, and the same thing, when the phone calls come in, you'd have to take the patch out and patch it into the room and so on. And those days are history.
Oh.
Well, we struck out tonight, brother. We
just struck out.
The
old black cradle phone?
Yeah.
Remember that little desk at the...
Yeah, well, that's what they all were like. All of them were. And they weren't little. They were big.
Oh, they were heavy.
Yeah.
Those were the... Yeah, they had to register your phone as a potential lethal weapon. Get cracked with that thing.
Well, we will hopefully have a scoreboard for you tonight. We struck out with a couple of our interviewees, but you're here, I'm here, and our listeners are here, and our traffic has been great. Tell people, please, about what we're doing. We're trying to give as much coverage as we can to high school sports. Of course, football is the big thing for us in the fall, but we're trying to cover as many other sports as we possibly can.
I'm going to run over to Gloucester tomorrow. Have you talked to Lauren?
Nope.
Okay, I will get Lauren. Because I missed her last year. I'll go over and get her tomorrow afternoon and have a talk with her.
Yeah, they're up 3-0 already.
For my first year of teaching. I go to Addison Gill today. I had a first of 2 days of stress test.
Well, you're stressing me out. Does that count? Do you get points for that?
No, that's your stress test.
All right.
So I go with the registration, and the last two times that I went to register for procedures there was one of my former students sitting there, and I was half expecting to see her sitting there. I walk in, and the girl doesn't say anything to me, and I went down, and she starts, okay, and I said, you know, here, she goes, okay, and I said, and you're one of my former students, aren't you? And I couldn't remember her first name, but I knew the face. She goes, yes, I was wondering if you were going to remember me.
Well, I got a scarier story than that, but we'll save that for another day. Our player of the week, our MSO player of the week, is from Gloucester, and I'm going to let you talk a little bit about his exploits on Friday. I hope to interview him tomorrow with Coach Zerilli, but Jan Pena Ortiz? Or is it John? How do we pronounce it? John. It's J-A-N.
Yeah.
But our Pena Ortiz is our player of the week. Didn't score a touchdown, but 31 carries for 167 yards.
He set him up, and he's not a big guy. He's playing the fullback position in the wing tee. And I'll tell you, he slipped through some cracks in the defensive line at Beverly that running backs have real no business getting through. I mean, you know, the wing tee is precision blocking and really great precision by the running backs of recognizing the hole and hitting it. Not thinking about it, hitting it. Not hesitating, not stutter-stepping, hitting it. You know, and as soon as you see the gap, you go to it. And he did that time after time after time after time. You know, he averaged, you know, 5 yards a carry. Did he get stopped? Of course he did. But, I mean, he just kept those chains moving. You know, Beverly scored on the opening kickoff. Gloucester went 75 yards before they turned it over. That took the entire rest of the first quarter. You know, they were patented.
Mm-hmm.
Gloucester.
Well, I heard you guys. Yep, yep.
Drive. It was just time and just sucking the life out of the clock, and Beverly couldn't stop them. When Gloucester needed the third down, they got a third down. If they weren't for a fourth down, they got the fourth down. And it was just an exertion of will. Mark Smith had not a big day yardage-wise. I think he had maybe 60 yards rushing Saturday. But again, huge touchdown in the back of the end zone. You know, we're watching it, and he goes high and comes down. And we knew he was tippy-toeing inside the back line. for that touchdown. But what an athletic play by Mark Smith. And the offensive line, the defensive line, they just kept going at Beverly and not giving a chance to breathe.
Well, Beverly has to bounce back this week looking for their first win, and they will be at Malden. And meantime, Gloucester will be at Somerville. Our broadcast game on Friday night will be Lynn Classical at Revere, 7 o'clock game. And that's the only broadcast game we're going to have, but we're going to have lots and lots of information and videos up this week, as we always do. Bill Newell gets thousands of them, covers every school in the conference, and it's just amazing how much stuff we can get out there. So we hope that you'll tell people and pass that along. And anything else there, Coach, you want to mention?
It looks like the Patriots are going to go move out of their comfort zone a little bit and go after Gordon, the receiver from Cleveland, who has been kind of a problem child. You know, they need someone to catch the ball, to give them some experience, to give them some other outside threat. You know, is Dez Bryant not far behind for an interview? You know, kind of hard to tell. This is probably, in the time that he's been there, there's talent in the team. It's young talent. That's one of the problems with the Pats right now, is they're so young. And how quickly can they get up to speed and become the past Patriots team? I think that's going to be the key for this season. You know, they are talented, but they just got to be better.
Mm-hmm. Well, everybody lays an egg. You know, it happens.
I'm not afraid of this game. It's not the doom and gloom. Everybody said, well, you know, when Kansas City thrashed them, you know, that was the end of it. Well, it wasn't the end of it. You know, when they lost last year again to Kansas City, oh, it's the end. No, well, it wasn't the end, because, you know, where did we end up? It's not where you are at the beginning of the season. It's where you end up at the end
of
the season.
Well, what's the cliche? It's not how you start, it's how you finish.
Exactly.
Yeah. All right. And I want to thank you for being with us here this weekend. I appreciate it. Let's see here. I'm just seeing if there's anything else. We have, what do we have? We will have, no, not this week. Never mind. Josh Arnold's program will be back a week from Friday. His program's called Turning Now. He'll be interviewing a lot of the political people, political candidates who are running for office in this off-year election. We'll talk some politics, maybe get Coach Kearns on. You like to talk politics, so we'll get you on that program.
Politics?
Yeah.
Come on. You
have an opinion I've heard of from time to time.
Yeah.
They tell me you have an opinion, so.
Yeah.
All right, let's get out of here.
I'll try to measure those, you know, responses.
Uh-huh. I'm rambling. So I do want to thank our guests. Matt Bouchard, Gary Larrabee. That's it, right? That's who we had tonight.
That's okay.
We
got a chance to spend a little bit of extended time with both those guys.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and Gary is always a fountain of information, especially locally with, you know, everybody knows what happens nationally. You know, it's in all the major newspapers, it's online. But you seldom get the kind of detail on what's going on with the local golfers who are very, very competitive, and you know, some of the listeners out there might be members of some of these clubs, you know, where these guys play.
Check the website also. There's a nice post up there on Kevin Fassett and the Ipswich High School Tigers with their big one over Newburyport over the weekend. And, of course, there will be more videos and interviews coming up. Bill will be traveling to Revere, talk to Coach Ciccatelli about that upcoming game with Lynn Classical on Friday night, our broadcast game. So thank you for being with us. My thanks to Tim Kearns, and thank you for listening. Check everything out. We need all the traffic we can muster here. Appreciate it. This is North Shore Sports Night, and this is MSO News Sports. You can email us at msonewsports@gmail.com. You can also find us, the shorthand is msonews.com or msosports.com. Both of those URLs will get you to our website. Thanks. See ya. Bye-bye.